I see you've got a bag from my favorite makers of bath and body stuff, Bubble Genius. What's in the bag?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would. I love their silly soaps.
Gee, you sound pretty Amsterdam excited to see what bubbly treat I've got.
Well, yeah. So, what'd you get?
I'm trying to tell you if you just pay attention. Okay, I'll give you one last hint. Dutch shoe!
Bless you? Hey, why won't you tell me what Bubble Genius soap is in the bag?
I guess I've really got to spell it out for you. I got the Dutch treat wooden shoe soap.
Ha ha!
All vegetable-based, of course, and smelling like delicious sunshine.
Oh, cool! So, a clog you'd actually want going down your drain!
Those bubble geniuses sure are bubble geniuses.
Bubblegenius.com!
Awesome.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hi, I'm Clint Webb, and I'm running for Senate. I have a short cropped haircut, a pretty enough yet accessible looking wife, and a newborn baby that I've dressed in a suit to prove to you that I mean business. For the last 15 years, I've lived my life in such a bland, uncontroversial, and repressed manner that it's almost unnatural. Why? Because I've been preparing to be your representative since I was a child. Most well-adjusted, sane men would be hesitant to take a job where their decisions would so drastically affect the lives of so many. But not me. I possess a sort of sociopathic narcissism that makes me think that I should be in charge of everyone. But all of that needs to start here at home, in this beautiful state that I've grown to love since I moved here 18 months ago. Together, we can piggyback some of our state's legitimate needs onto my unquenchable lust for self-glorification. And that's a promise. All of my motives are ulterior. I'm self-involved to the point of psychosis. My soul is terrifying. And that's leadership. So this November, let's send Washington a message.
And what is that message? Hey, me.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Pleasure is just a click away with radio as your guest. There's no quicker way, so click away. Radio does the rest.
And we have Chet from Mesquite on the line. Hello, Chet. Hello.
You think you're so smart?
Hello?
Why are you always talking about drugs and homos and Jews? Isn't there anything else to talk about?
You know what I hate, Chet? I hate people who call me up and tell me what they don't want to talk about. You don't want to talk about blacks and gays? Then why do you bring them up in the first place, huh? Sounds to me like you like talking about them.
Keep talking, Jew boy. Life is short.
Stu, let's send a microwave oven out to Chet.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, March 17th, 2012. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. It's really damn good soap. You know, I just want to say at the top here, I don't think we're going to get to everything that I have on this list of things to talk about.
I didn't know you had a list.
I have a gigantic heaping bucket. And I just yank things out of it. And
I was waiting for you to say you have a gigantic list, and I was, of course, going to find some, you know, sexual metaphor to throw in there.
Well, I mean, there's so many things on the show that I'm thinking, and I'm going to say this now because I'm almost convinced that it's going to happen. What we're going to have to do is spill the topics from this show over into the after party.
Because
there's just a lot of important things to get to this week, and I want to make sure we get to all of them. And then, plus, you know, of course, there are after-party things for tomorrow that, you know, we're going to still talk about. But it will also include stuff from the free show. So, you've been warned.
Cool.
Before we dive into all those things, I want to send a huge thanks to my friend Sean Phillips. He runs this company called Full Strength, and they make a fitness shake called Full Strength. It's easily the best tasting and most effective fitness shake I've ever tried. I mean, it's so damn good. I've been drinking those things for several years now. And in fact, I often drink it like a couple a day, like two of them a day. They don't taste all like artificial sweetener and or thick or ridiculous. They're actually really damn good. So if you want to check out Full Strength, go to fullstrength.com.
So you drink protein shakes too then? Dude, I have the mind of a 14-year-old.
You really do. And I know exactly what you're getting at.
My sense of humor stopped at 14.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I am a child. I'm a 42-year-old man-child.
I'm way ahead of you, though. I knew exactly where that's where you're going to go.
I suck so
protein
hard.
Protein shakes.
Yeah. And there it goes again.
But no, these are more than like protein shakes. These are more like they're somewhere between a protein shake and a meal replacement shake.
Mm.
So you could actually eat these as a meal. I would actually drink them for dessert. I would actually have them after dinner.
Don't they have like a crap load of fat in them? I mean, I would have to imagine. Or, you know, carbs and all that other fun stuff. In other words, isn't it really sort of, you know, aren't you putting a lot on top of your meal?
It's about 300 calories.
That's not bad.
About 830% of the U.S. recommended daily allowance of vitamin C.
Dear God.
It's loaded with...
Well, at least you won't get scurvy.
It's loaded also with potassium. Which, if you're really into bike riding, potassium reduces, or any sort of aerobic fitness, potassium reduces the impact of lactic acid on the muscles.
Interesting.
I just want to toss that science in.
Thanks.
But potassium
that's
is important.
Mr. Wizard.
Yeah. Well, that's what you see. A lot of bike riders will carry a banana in their back pocket. Hey, shut up. Shut up.
Or are you just glad to see me?
Da 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 da.
Exactly. God, it's like vaudeville here. We're going to get the hook in a second.
So go check out fullstrength.com. Sean Phillips is a really good guy. And, you know, I mean, the one thing that I can really say about Sean is he's not just another sort of fitness gimmicky huckster. I mean, he's trustworthy. You can really, what Sean Phillips says, you can take it to the bank.
So he's not going to try to sell me gold coins then?
No. No, and he's not, you know, it's not a payday loan company or anything like that. It's actually a really good.
Like that Western Sky thing that I keep seeing commercials for, where they'll lend you like $10,000, but then honestly, like the rate is like 1,000%.
That's right.
It's like, yeah, we'll give you $10,000, and then within like 4 years, you've got to pay back $85,000.
It's 1,000% and your left kidney,
yeah,
you know. But, you know, I mean, I always get the chocolate, and it's like packets. It's like powder packets. And you put them in to a blender or a smoothie maker with some ice and about 16 ounces of cold water. And then I toss in a spoonful of peanut butter with the chocolate shake mix. Then blend that up and then just drink it down. Sometimes right out of the blender, like a real effing hot shot.
Yeah, that's impressive.
By the way, while I'm plugging, I want to give a big plug to thedailybanter.com. Both of us have started writing regular columns. I've been writing every day, 5 days a week.
Yeah, you're a freaking machine, man.
I got a lot to say and not enough time to say it. Well, not enough places to say it. I mean, I got, you know, you'd think between Facebook, Twitter, the blog, the podcast, the other podcast, Huffington Post, you know, I'd have pretty much enough outlets for my gabbing, but no, I need this one extra thing, the Daily Banter, where I'm doing like a essay length column 5 days a week, and I really got to thank Ben Cohen for giving us the opportunity. You're doing it what, like twice a week or three times, including the mailbag?
Twice a week and then the mailbag.
So it's like three times a week.
I mean, I've been a little bit sporadic over the past couple of weeks, only because I've had so much in the way of project work on my desk. I mean, deadlines and stuff that literally was taking up, you know, 10 to 12 hours a day. But yeah, usually I write two pieces a week. The next one will be out tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll talk about that subject in a little bit. And then the mailbag. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. Then I'm only a couple of columns beyond that. I mean, I'm doing four a week plus the mailbag. So technically five, but really four essays.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, writing four long, you know, full-length essays, yeah, four columns a week, is that's a bear.
So it's thedailybanter.com, and yep. You know,
yeah, I do like banter.
Yeah.
Very much.
And what I'm basically, it's like a Huffington Post length thing. It's like a new Huffington Post column every day, you know. And so, and what I was really encouraged to see is now we're kind of knocking it back and forth a little bit with this topic of double standards in the press and race and regarding
my response column will be tomorrow.
Oh,
so congratulations!
Yeah.
I am UTFO and you are Roxanne Shanté in this rap battle.
Okay, well I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it's just. If you haven't seen it yet on the Daily Banter and then also bleeding over into the Huffington Post, Chez, you wrote a piece about Bill O'Reilly and Bernard Goldberg covering. Let's talk about Meta. You wrote a piece about Bill O'Reilly and Bernard Goldberg covering a story from Norfolk, Virginia, about a couple of reporters for a paper called The Virginian Pilot. They were out to see a movie, I believe, at a theater. Several movies let out at the same time. Bunch of people, a lot of kids flood into the street. They pull up this couple of reporters. I guess they're a real couple. They pull up to a stoplight. Someone throws a rock at the passenger side window. We don't know whether or not the window was shattered or the size of the rock. But this infuriates the driver of the car, the guy. He gets out of the car to confront whoever threw the rock, and then a couple of kids come up and start, I guess, punching and kicking him.
Yeah.
And he gets back in the car. They call 911, and they end up at the end of all of it with some minor injuries, and they drive their car home, and they never seek medical attention or anything like that.
Where did you hear that? Because I heard that not from O'Reilly, but I heard that they did at least go to the hospital.
I don't think they did. I mean, I read a couple of pieces that there were several op-eds in the Virginian Pilot, and then there was some news stories. And I think both of the op-eds, and well, there was also an op-ed from the editor of the Virginian Pilot. All three of them, I believe, said that they didn't seek medical attention for their injuries.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's hard to know. I mean, you know what? You're not wrong for thinking that, because the story, when it first broke, 2 weeks later. All right. So there's a blank to be filled in there.
Mm-hmm.
The two reporters asked their boss not to name them in any story about this incident. And suffice to say, this is an incident, non-fatal, little bit of a fracas outside their car after the guy got out to actually confront the kids. So this would be maybe something in the police blotter section of the paper, maybe. But it didn't. They decided not to run with it. And 2 weeks later, they ended up running an op-ed, which then got picked up by Drudge, blown way out of proportion, where Drudge is saying that 100 black youths beat up a white couple. Okay, so then Fox News picks it up. Bill O'Reilly and all these guys. Bill sends his producer guy, his danger boy, his stalking producer, Jesse Waters.
His Renfield.
His Renfield. That's exactly
how I refer to him.
That cracked me up. Out to sort of stalk and confront the editor of the newspaper. Basically, their theory being that there's a double standard here. Why does Trayvon Martin get so much coverage? Or if this had been a white-on-black crime, it would have received much more coverage. Since it's a black-on-white crime, it doesn't get as much coverage because the press is in the bag for the African-American community or something like that.
First comment is irrelevant. Second, I think, is a legitimate question. In other words, bringing up Trayvon Martin and comparing these two incidents is ludicrous. They're not the same thing.
Right.
And I agree with you on that.
Yes.
Asking the question, saying that if the roles were reversed, if the races were reversed, that it would have been much different in the eyes of the media, I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
I think there's no way around that.
Oh, I don't know, because once you examine the circumstances of the situation, it doesn't seem important enough. Again, it's like a police blotter level story. In addition to the fact that, I mean, the guy, the driver, of the guy, I think his name is Mike Forster. He was the Mail reporter, and then his lady friend was in the passenger seat.
His lady friend.
His lady, I don't know. I don't.
I'm 1947. Yeah, he had his lady friend with him, see?
Say, he had his lady friend with him,
get
mister.
Get your name out of the car.
Say there, mister, why I ought to pound you.
Mm-hmm.
So he got out of the car and actually confronted these kids. Bad idea. Whether they're black, white, Latino, Asian, whatever. Bunch of kids just get out of the movie theater and they you start wanting to throw down with them. There's going to be a fracas. There's something's going to happen, you know. So... And it was a minor injuries. What they called, what the police are referring to it as, is a simple assault. And again, this is, to me, this is something that belongs maybe in one of those weekly local newspaper rags that you pick up for free at the diner, where all of the news in it is based on some guy listening to a police scanner. It's a minor nothing story is what I'm getting at. So if it had been... couple of white guys on, you know, against a black driver of the car, I don't think it would be a big story. No, I don't think it would get that much coverage, if any.
If it had just been, say, two people against one or something like that, then, you know, there's a story in numbers. If it was a large enough group, it doesn't have to be 100 people like Drudge. We all know why Drudge is blowing it out of proportion. You know, it's what he does.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be 100 people, but if it was a large group of people, and they were white and the drivers were black, it would absolutely be a story. And that's the thing. What really amounted to essentially nothing, like you say, a police blotter story, mm-hmm. I think would have been elevated to something much larger simply by reversing the races. I really do believe that.
Well, it's really, really hard to know that. It is
hard to know that, but the point I was getting at and what Bob is talking about is the fact that I defended certainly not O'Reilly and Goldberg.
Yeah.
They brought Bernie Goldberg on, and he gave what I thought was a salient quote, which is unusual because generally he's not even lucid. He's completely out to lunch. But, you know, he gave a very salient quote on the way the media looks at black versus white issues and the double standard it has when covering black versus, you know, black on white versus white on black crime.
So I'm going to jump in here. We got to take a quick break and we'll come back to that right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yes, it is. We're back. And you were saying, Chez, you were talking about Bernie Goldberg and his quote about paternalistic white people.
Right. Well, look, O'Reilly brings on Bernie Goldberg. And I don't agree with their conflation of Trayvon Martin and the incident in Virginia. I'm not even sure that the incident in Virginia is a big deal. But what they are saying about the larger picture, about the way that media... the media reports the double standard when it comes to the media reporting black on white crime versus white on black crime I think even if you don't peg it off of one single incident, I think that larger issue, what they're saying, is absolutely correct. And here's what Goldberg had to say. I actually have the quote in front of me. Is here's what it's really all about. It goes beyond journalism. It's a much bigger issue. It's about white, usually white liberal paternalism, where they say, well, we really can't hold black people up to the same standards as we hold white people up to. That's why we are not putting it in the paper. They are different. So two things happen after that. One, the newspaper, the media, they don't want to wear that kind of dirty laundry because it's kind of embarrassing for the black community. And two, they don't want to give ammunition to the bigots who probably would say, you see, that's how they all behave. Now, look, we hate, we detest the bigots, but a newspaper has a responsibility to cover legitimate news. I think taking out the Virginia thing, as for legitimate news, I think that quote is absolutely correct. And it's very rare that I can say that about anything Bernie Goldberg has to say.
I don't know. I ended my response. And you know what? There is a lot of overlap in my position and your position. But
I know. There's a piece that I wrote responding to you, like I said, you know, UTFO and Roxanne Jonte. Or actually, I'd rather think of us as Cool Mo D and LL Cool J.
That's better. As long as I get to be LL.
My response to you is, you know, I was very, very... I'm not slapping you down. I mean, obviously, yeah, you and I do agree a lot on this. I have questions, and I tend to do this a lot. I tend to write about stuff that, you know, and I know it's actually kind of cowardly, you know. I mean, I just pose questions, you know. I'm kind of trying to think things out in my head. I don't know whether, you know, you offered up a lot of reasons why the double standard exists. In other words, my thing was just to acknowledge that the double standard actually does exist within the media, and you came back with sort of, well, yes, it does exist. It does exist, and here's why it should.
Yeah.
And my response, which will appear in the Daily Banter tomorrow for everybody who's listening to this, basically says, yeah, but is there really an excuse? And I'm not 100% sure. You know, I think you made some excellent points, but I'm not sure that it really is the media's job to be paternalistic, to sort of decide, look, we're going to treat races, ethnicities, whatever, different. We're going to treat two groups of people differently when it comes to how we cover them. And I guarantee you, I can give you examples personally from working in the media for a long time that they do. I mean, they really do. If the burden of proof when it comes to a black on white crime, the burden of proof to calling something racially motivated, calling a crime racially motivated when, say, a black guy kicks the crap out of a white guy or something, the burden of proof is much, much higher than it is when it's a white versus black person. And by the way, I'm one of the things I say in the piece tomorrow, and I want to make this so freaking clear, all right? Because I think everybody needs to know where I'm coming from on this. Number one, unlike what Bernie Goldberg and Bill O'Reilly are doing, I'm not claiming white persecution. I'm really not. You know, I mean, and I'm hoping that people don't come out of this thinking that I'm some kind of racist, or even worse, call me a latent racist who doesn't realize that I'm racist. I hate that charge because it's one of those things that's impossible to defend against. But I'm not approaching this. We all know why O'Reilly is doing it. He's doing it to throw, and Drudge, they're doing it to throw red meat to their, you know, their audience of, you know, their audience's white resentment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not coming at it from that perspective. I'm coming at it from just a, well, look, is it journalistically, does it violate journalistic ethics to do that? I'm a white guy living in the United States of America at the beginning of the 21st century. I got it freaking great, and I know that. I don't think I'm being persecuted in any way. You know, I'm not Michael Douglas in Falling Down, bemoaning, you know, how crappy everything's gotten. You know, and I'm certainly not some Fox viewer sitting out there thinking that you know, the other are taking over the, you know, my once great country. No, I'm saying this only to sort of ask the questions about whether it's journalistically correct to sort of take that tack. That's all.
Yeah. I don't, and of course you have insight. I mean, having worked in depth with cable news, you kind of know, but from what I've observed and some of the things I've seen, you know, across the transom over the years, it seems like every time you turn on local news, you see a black guy's mugshot or a black guy's composite police drawing.
Absolutely true, or
a black guy in court, or rewinding 20 years, the O.J. Simpson trial, which is easily the most covered murder case in the history of media.
Now, wait, I think before you go off on that, because I wanted to mention that, and I didn't put it in the piece that I wrote, the response piece that I wrote. I think the O.J. Simpson trial is beyond apples and oranges. Because I'm not talking about just that the media doesn't cover black on white crime. Oh my God, of course they do. And you just brought it up beautifully. Local media, especially, it's freaking all they do. Local news is nothing but a cavalcade of black people, you know, in court, you know, or dirtbags in court, you know, the, you know, minorities and dirty looking white guys. I mean, it's nothing but that. I get it. You know, believe me, I did it for so, so long. What I'm talking about is the willingness to attach a racial component or racial motivation to a crime. And that's where I think OJ doesn't count, because it was obvious almost immediately it was obvious that OJ, you know, granted, there were racist jerks out there who were, you know, I love how I say jerk instead of, you know, a-hole, because I can't say what I want to say on this.
Yeah,
but, I mean, of course it brought racists out who were like, OJ, you know, OJ and his white woman, you know, killed his white woman, proves whatever, you know, mm-hmm. whatever this idiot racist believes. But everybody knew pretty much right off the bat that O.J. killing Nicole, and I'm sorry, I will say that. I'm not even attaching allegedly to it. You know, O.J. killing Nicole was everyone knew that it was not a racially motivated crime. I'm talking about one of the things I mentioned tomorrow is, and I believe this, and I've seen sort of subtle, you know, quiet examples of this, that it would really take, you know, when a white guy... white guy kills a black guy. A lot of times, I mean, unless they're, you know, unless we're talking, you know, street violence, a lot of times there can be, you know, it doesn't take a lot for someone to ask the question, well, was this racially motivated? When a black guy kills a white guy, that black guy would have to have literally been shouting, "Kill Whitey," for anybody to say, you know, anybody in the media to look at it and say, this is racially motivated. You know, and once again, the burden of proof, it has to be, it's just sort of accepted. And I think that's, once again, there's something paternalistic about it, and I think there's something also really crappy about it, kind of what Goldberg said about, you know, when black crime happens, whether it's, black, to be honest, whether it's black on black or black on white, the media just kind of accepts it and just says, well, you know, that's the way things are. And I think that there's something, again, sort of paternalistic and crappy about that.
Well, when there are indications, as there are in the Trayvon Martin case, we want to take that as an example.
Right. Once again, another apples and oranges.
Well, Virginia, it might be. It might be.
Everything we're talking about does not have anything to do with Trayvon, which, yes, I do believe was the result of absolutely racial profiling, period.
Well, yeah. And that's what the Trayvon Martin situation, we do have evidence of there being some form of racial profiling going on there.
Absolutely.
So we do have an indication of kind of. A racial component to the Trayvon Martin shooting.
Exactly, and it deserved to be. I said it deserved to be reported.
Okay,
because there is an obvious racial component there.
Well, that's what I don't understand about Norfolk then, because Norfolk, that situation, and I love saying Norfolk on the radio. Right. That situation, there's no indication whatsoever that there was a racial motivation there. This guy got out of his car to confront a bunch of teenagers who, again. You confront any teenagers who are out for a good time and they're in a big group and they're posturing and they're full of hormones and all of that. There's going to be trouble. And so I don't see a racial motivation there. So
again,
conversely.
Let's not talk about that specific. I mean, I guess that was the jumping off point.
So you're saying that if it was a white on black crime, the media would assume a racial motivation without any indication.
Exactly. The media would assume it takes a lot less for the media to assume a racial motivation. Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. The racial motivation of a group of white people beating up a black guy is actually kind of rightfully assumed.
Well, let's come back to it. I want to spend one last segment on this topic.
Okay, cool. Because I have actually, I will tell you one quick story from local news that kind of confirms what I mean, at least, gives you an idea of what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And also, you know, I think we'll provide a little bit of insight.
Okay. We'll take a break and back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. It's really damn excellent. I mean, Bubble Genius has been with the show since the beginning. And you know, it's one thing to have a sponsor support the show. It's another thing to have a really cool sponsor, liberal, independent business sponsor. That makes a really damn good product, and that's Bubble Genius. You want to buy their soap and their bath and body products for everyone in your family, including the dog. And here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Hey, I see you've got a bag from my favorite makers of bath and body stuff, Bubble Genius. What's in the bag?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would. I love their silly soaps.
You sound pretty Amsterdam excited to see what bubbly treat I've got.
Well, yeah. So, what'd you get?
I'm trying to tell you if you just pay attention. Okay, I'll give you one last hint. Dutch shoe!
Bless you? Hey, why won't you tell me what Bubble Genius soap is in the bag?
I guess I've really got to spell it out for you. I got the Dutch treat wooden shoe soap.
Ha ha!
All vegetable-based, of course, and smelling like delicious sunshine.
Oh, cool! So, a clog you'd actually want going down your drain!
Those bubble geniuses sure are bubble geniuses.
Bubblegenius.com!
Awesome.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And your promo code is Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-E-Z. I say that every week and I just choked on it. You'll get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com if you enter that when you go to buy your soapy goodness. Well, getting back to this topic, and we have about 4 minutes in which to encapsulate a very complex and difficult issue. The one thing I wanted to add, and this is something that I wrote in the Daily Banter and then subsequently for the Huffington Post, that, you know, when there is the assignment of racial motive by the media to a white-on-black crime, there is a pretty long history of that sort of thing in terms of there being... Well, yeah, in terms of white on black crime. I mean, it's been notorious. And plus, there's a societal aspect where you have, you know, a majority-minority dynamic and a lot of animosity ricocheting around because of that. And, you know, there was a war over it. And there was, you know, 100 plus years of oppression following that war. And so, you know, when you have a situation like that guy who, African-American man who was dragged to death behind a pickup truck, by a white guy,
right.
you kind of have to wonder, was this racially motivated?
Oh, you don't have to wonder about that. Absolutely not. That was 100% racially motivated.
So, you know, so there is some justification to that. And
I agree.
Yeah. So you were going to bring up, I think you were going to bring up an example, like a specific media example.
See, the issue that I have is what you're saying is absolutely correct.
Okay.
And the question becomes, should the media actually just sort of acquiesce to reality? And that needs to be taken into consideration. I mean, look, you know, there are outside facts. There are always outside pressures on the way a media organization covers something that have nothing to do with practicing journalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, great example. You and I have talked about this many, many times, and I've written on the site, you know, on Deus Ex Malcontent all the time, about sort of the pressure that is exerted on news organizations within themselves to be cognizant of, like, liberal bias. And so what winds up happening, because, you know, they're so browbeaten by the right, what winds up happening is you often get overcompensation. You know, you and I have talked about this a lot, and I've seen it happen. You get, in an effort to not appear liberally biased, a news organization will sometimes go too far in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the great irony is that it never appeases the conservatives because they need their boogeyman. But likewise, there is kind of an interesting guideline in a lot of local newsrooms, especially. Sometimes it's unspoken, but a lot of times it's discussed openly. It just kind of, they come right out and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it basically sort of speaks to the way that the press handles the subject of race and minority crime. And it kind of works like this. If a crime, let's say a crime's committed, and the only description that you have of the suspect is a black male, 5'11", wearing a white t-shirt, you don't air or publish that description.
Yeah.
And the reason why, of course, is because, you know, obviously that means, that, you know, that's nothing. It's so vague. You know, a black male, 5'11", wearing a white t-shirt, that's everybody. You know, it does no good. But the vagueness really is not the real reason behind not going with the description. I've actually heard managers say flat out, look, you have to pay special attention. Normally, they won't run with a description that vague regardless. But I have actually heard managers several times say, you know, especially, look, you know, we don't want to say that about the black community. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to put a description like that out there. And I, you know, before you even say it, you know, I agree with your, you know, sort of look back at history. I agree that you kind of don't want to do that because there is a history in the black community of being, all considered criminals by racist jerks, mm-hmm. and being rousted, you know, having cops go in and just, well, the black person fits the description of the person who committed this crime. Trayvon Martin is a fantastic example of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but still, what I'm saying there is, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying that it is there. That there is that reality of the press handling stories differently based on races. And you make excellent points about the fact that that may be correct. My only question is it, as I've said before, from a strictly sort of dispassionate, hopefully unbiased media standpoint, is it the press's job to be paternalistic? Or is it the press's job to be cognizant of those things instead of just reporting things as they are and treating everybody the same? I don't know. I really don't.
I do think it's the press's job to be sensitive in certain cases. And I also want to highlight something, and I actually included this. There is media complicity in the post-Civil War, you know, the subsequent, till the Civil Rights Act and even beyond that, you know, sort of racially motivated oppression. I mean, a lot of the stereotypes, like repulsively negative stereotypes about black people, were perpetuated by the media. Maybe not necessarily by, well, certainly by more yellow journalistic news media, you know, the Hearsts of the world and things like that. But there were also movies of the turn of the century were disgusting. I mean, disgustingly racist. And it was all part of this national effort to reunify America after the Civil War and give North and South a common enemy. It turned out to be black people. And so that could only happen with the help of the media in some form or another. So if the press is sensitive, you know, maybe they should be. I don't know.
Sensitive is a good word. You know, there's nothing saying the media shouldn't be sensitive.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we got to take one last break, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Uh-huh. We're back, and... you know, it's really difficult to encapsulate complicated issues like this in a very limited time span. So make sure to go to thedailybanter.com or the Huffington Post, and, well, specifically thedailybanter.com and secondarily the Huffington Post. Because at the Huffington Post...
Yeah, you're in Huffington. I'm probably not going to publish my response there. It's just, you know...
Well, you know, the thing about the Huffington Post is you get all the insane comments that only ended up vindicating everything
gallery.
I was saying. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, you get the peanut gallery, and they are crazy.
And that's it. You know, I play the talk radio thing at the top of the show. The comment sections of the Huffington Post, anyone who thinks that the Huffington Post is some sort of liberals-only club is out of their minds.
God, no.
Just go look at the comment section. It is literally, you know, if I were to wager a percentage here, I would say 95% conservative.
Read my blog. There is nothing funnier when I write something that I know will, you know, that I know is going to draw fire. Mm-hmm. Nothing funnier than like 2 days after it gets put up at Huffington, I publish all the really hateful comments about me. And I love it. I bask
in
it.
Yeah.
I shower in that with Bob's hibiscus soap.
I do too. And people think I'm insane. Like, you know, I text to Joy. I say, you know, honey, I just saw all these comments on the Huffington Post here, a couple of them. She goes, why do you read that? Why do you pay attention to those things?
Great.
Yeah, they're outstanding. I mean,
you see, like, in the blurb section, in the little blurb section I have of my blog, my favorite is I actually put up a blurb from a Huffington Post commenter who said, it is truly sad that someone like Mr. Pazienza has a public forum to express his views. Mm-hmm. In a more civilized time, he would, at best, be confined to an institution for the criminally insane, or, at the very least, marginalized from civilized society. That's brilliant. And highly articulate, too.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I get, I also get email, too, from these people. And I was, this week I was referred to as a douchebag. And douche was spelled D-O-O-S-H-B-A-G.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Here's some other just random examples. I'm looking at the Huffington Post right now. This guy never fails to amuse with his searing hate of anything Fox, clouding his vision and rationality. Everything in this piece is flat out wrong. So, like, yeah, okay. Like I'm making up Jim Crow. Yeah, all right.
Nah, man, it's just, you know, it's so not worth it.
I know.
It really isn't. It's, you know, when I first started getting linked by FARC, Drew Curtis told me flat out, he's like, don't read what the FARCers say. Don't, seriously. He says, don't read the comments. It doesn't matter. But I started really kind of enjoying them at Huffington. The FARC crowd are really crazy, and they're great, but crazy. No, the Huffington Post crowd, though, is full of people who think they're smart. And that's the thing that always pisses me off. Because it's like, or what we're actually not pisses me off. That's so damn entertaining.
Well, what they often do is they come up with some sort of really clever, that you could tell they're really proud of, some response to what you've written. And it's clear they just haven't read anything you just wrote. It's so easy to run circles around people who haven't read what you've written or are just loaded with just bile and hatred. Like one guy saying black people should just get over it. Yeah. You know, beyond, and I love it when I'm accused of just making stuff up. Like, I'm just making it up about the Southern strategy. It's just nonsense. Some sort of liberal media conspiracy. You know, there was a thing on Andrew Sullivan's blog today. As a trailer, Dinesh D'Souza is a guy who's often a,
say
you know,
no more.
Yeah. You know who he is. He's often on.
I absolutely know who he is.
Right. He's on cable news.
Raging
a lot.
Idiot.
Yeah. Raging idiot. Well, he's got a new propumentary, it's a propaganda documentary film out. And Sullivan posted the trailer. And basically, this documentary envisions the president tearing down America in his second term, driven by a Kenyan Muslim hatred of American colonialism, etc. Right? And this is all in the trailer. I'm not making it up. So, at one point, the trailer shows a couple of back-to-back clips. This is where it's really hitting a fever pitch, at a climax towards the end. They start nailing through a bunch of different visuals to illustrate what Dinesh, I guess, is saying. The trailer shows an African-American family just utterly destroying a Monopoly board in some sort of inner-city apartment. There's this gigantic African-American family, and they're playing Monopoly, and they just wreck the board and start fighting. And then right after that, they show a bunch of white people holding candles. Oh. Isn't that nice? Excellent. No, I'm making it up. I'm making it up about, you know, the racial motives for some of these media jackasses and the Republican Party deliberately stoking racial animosity in order to generate angry white guy votes and ratings. Sure.
Worse.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is too. That is exactly what it is.
So
you know, it's the stoking of white resentment.
Did you see the big screamer conspiracy of the day on Drudge today?
Which one?
Big.
I lose track after a while. I'm still stuck on the president is gay.
Yeah, well that one too, which is
that
just
was a winner.
Utterly absurd. Paul Cameron from the family research, yada, yada, yada. There's like there must be two dozen of those
family something or other
family organizations, which are just wingnut fronts for spreading bigotry and hatred. But yeah, that guy, Paul Cameron, you wrote a great piece about that, too, for the Daily Banter.
Right. And how you don't get into debates on Facebook when it comes to politics. Such a waste. Yeah. They came out of the woodwork. The crazies.
On Facebook?
Yeah, well, no, I went to, just really quick, I went to that piece that you're talking about. I went to a friend's Facebook page, mm-hmm. and I never do this. I never comment on politics on somebody else's Facebook page, ever, because it's just like, you know what, that's your house. I got no part of that. Unless it's somebody I'm really good friends with, and it's like a healthy debate, that's one thing. But like this person was like kind of a loose friend, somebody I knew a long time ago, put up an article saying that, linked to an article saying that Obama's dad was like a terrorist, and you know that that news of this was going to hurt President Obama's already tenuous, Barack Hussein Obama's already tenuous grasp on the White House and legally contested, you know, and how the birth certificate was fake, and we all knew that. And, you know, it was basically, it was written to hit every single note played by conspiracy theorists, and actually it was, because it came from ChristWire.org. And I told her, so I put one line, I said, I take it you don't know that ChristWire is a satire site. And astonishingly, like, out of the woodwork come her friends to say, it doesn't matter, it's true, it's true. You'll, you know, someday you'll find out, and I, you know, and I'm like, I just told you, it's a joke. It's a joke. And you know how delusional you have to be? How completely, ferociously dedicated to any belief, anything you read, anything at all true or false that confirms your biases? Do you know how ferocious you have to be in that conviction? To be that freaking delusional,
right.
to have somebody tell you, look, by the way, this is a joke site. This isn't true. It's been written. It's not real. And have that person say, oh no, it's real. It's not a joke. Okay, crazy. I'm going back now.
Oh,
I'm gonna go sit down.
Well, there's another thing that's
coming. And
down.
I didn't even get into an argument with him. I was just like, I'm like, please keep the comedy gold coming. It's like you just brush him off.
Well, and it's all getting stoked. I mean, you know, as we've pointed out many, many times, the famous Mark Halperin quote about Matt Drudge regarding the mainstream press. Drudge rules their world.
Yeah, rules their world, absolutely.
Here was the big all capital letters red. It was red. It was the red Drudge headline.
Got red font.
Yeah, above the you know, above the logo and everything. It says Obama lit agent shocker. Lit agents are.
Yes, I do know what this is. Yes,
Obama lit agent shocker. Quote: born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. End quote. This is, and the story links to Breitbart.
Yeah.
On Breitbart.com, they have a new section called The Vetting, which is intended to vet the president. Right. He's been president for over 3 years now. Yeah. Do we need to vet him?
Of course,
because for the
white xenophobic, you know, assholes. Yes, of course we need to.
For the conspiracy theorists, right?
Right.
Who still think that
Who will never be satisfied.
Right. And who still aren't satisfied that that Hillary Clinton didn't kill Vince Foster. They still think she killed Vince Foster, by the way. I just want to point that out. And I love they preface this whole thing by saying a note from senior management. Andrew Breitbart was never a birther, and Breitbart News is a site that has never advocated the narrative of birtherism. In fact, Andrew believed, as we do, that President Barack Obama was born in Honolulu, Hawaii on August 4th, 1961.
But yet, here, take a look at this.
Yet Andrew also believed that the complicit mainstream media had refused to examine President Obama's ideological past or the carefully crafted persona he and his advisors had constructed for him. It is for this reason that we launched The Vetting, an ongoing series in which we explore the ideological background of President Obama, not to relitigate 2008, but because ideas and actions have consequences. So they go into this whole thing,
it
basically.
It is not just to relitigate. It's to relitigate and relitigate and relitigate and keep it going and make sure that it never ends. Got an insane story about, you know, you say you saw Obama, you know, before the day he was supposedly born, smoking a cigarette outside a hut in Kenya. Bring it on.
That's right.
We want to hear about it.
So the... So what they did is they found this booklet from the literary agency that the president represented by. And he was in the process of writing a book called Journeys in Black and White. And he abandoned it. But this was the bio in this lit agency's handbook. Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. The son of an American anthropologist and a Kenyan finance minister, he attended Columbia University and worked as a financial journalist and editor for Business International Corporation. He served as a project coordinator in Harlem for the New York Public Interest Research Group and was executive director of the Developing Communities Project in Chicago's South Side. His commitment to social and racial issues will be evident in his first book, Journeys in Black and White. Okay, so if this is even legitimate at all, what often happens when you're trying to sell a book to publishers is you craft your bio. I'm not going to say everybody does it, but a lot of people do. You know, agents often tell actors and people they represent, you know what, your name might be a little difficult for people to remember. You think about taking a different name, you know, like a stage name. But you know what? All of that aside, it's kind of irrelevant. Because what Matt Drudge has done now is on a site which people rarely click on the links, they just scan the headlines. He's injected the birther issue back into the conversation. And you now have...
Of course he has. And it's never going to go away.
Right. We have now a reignited... Given them more fuel for their conspiracy theory.
That's fine.
So, well, thanks, Matt Drudge. And I fully expect, I haven't seen cable news today, but I'm sure it's been discussed somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure Ducey's been all over it, or will be tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and, you know...
The five are on it right now.
Yeah. And even if it's...
sorry, that's right. It's I keep forgetting that I'm 3 hours behind everybody.
Well, even if it's discussed in the form of debunking it, it's still, I mean, even us discussing it actually adds fuel to the fire, because people only hear things the way they want to hear it. They say, well, of course, Chris Matthews is going to debunk this. Chris Matthews in the bag for Obama. You know, that's what you could say about us, too. So we're all part of the conspiracy.
It's important to constantly keep reminding independent voters that this is what they've got. This is what they're all about.
Well, in our role as media critics, this is kind of, you know, it's criticizing the media and debunking media process. That's kind of what we do. So, you know, and Drudge is for better or worse. I mean, and 99.9% of the time, it's always for worse. You know, he's kind of the source. He's the hub of where a lot of media people get their news. And they get their tips from, and that's a sad fact.
I've looked at Drudge 10 times in my entire life. Really, you know, even when Drudge was hot, was really hot. You know, was like, you know, well, you know, when I worked in news, and it was like, okay, scan his stuff. You know what? He's certainly, when it comes to aggregating columnists and stuff like that, that's fine. But no, I don't read Drudge.
Well, you're better off. You're better off for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Exactly.
I just, you know, I look at Drudge like with the same attitude and frequency I look at Fox News Channel or listen to clips of Rush Limbaugh on Media Matters. I want to know what they're up to. You know, I feel like, well, we do have access to kind of spy on what they're planning.
You can spy on your enemy for the first time. You know, pretty much. Anywhere when it comes to communications.
Yeah, we can kind of get a sneak peek in terms of what narratives and memes they're developing and what direction they might be going, so we can prepare to either respond or get out ahead of it and block it. So I think it's, you know, I think it's an important part of the process to keep an eye on guys like Drudge. And as
I
you know
you're right, but God, does it pain me. It just depresses me.
Yeah. By the way, at the bottom of this piece on Breitbart, I'm just noticing this. They've got a picture of the president with Reverend Wright.
Of course, they're bringing that crap back again.
But you know, Andrew Breitbart, not a birther. Well, it was never a birther, and Breitbart.com doesn't cover birthers.
Right.
They just don't do it.
No.
You know.
It just. Yeah, the idea that they're bringing back all the best hits. You know, this is the reunion tour where they're going to be playing all the big hits from, you know, 4 years ago.
But they've added this new gay twist.
Now the president is gay. That's their new single. The new single is "The President is Gay."
You know,
mixed in with all the favorite oldies that the audience really wants to hear, the crowd pleasers, you know, like Reverend Wright and, you know, a communist and Marxist and, you know, not born here. And just, it's going to be what every awful, crappy, you know, aging, dying band reunion tour is like.
Yeah. Well, you know, it occurred to me that they've been trying to say the president's gay for quite some time now. I mean, Rush Limbaugh has been all over that meme. I mean, just kind of alluding to it, like, oh,
President Obama wants to have us all grab the ankles and,
you know, and that's what he's been doing for years now. They, you know, they try to kind of paint him as this effete, spindly San Francisco liberal.
Sure, because he's not a real man. You know, he doesn't clear brush out in front of his, you know, BS ranch in freaking Texas.
Yeah.
Or land on, you know, an aircraft carrier with a, you know, with a BS flight suit on.
This guy's...
Yeah, that's a real man.
It's just, it's unbelievable what they've been trying to pin on this guy for 4 or 5 years now. And none of it, you know what, none of it really sticks. And I'm speaking in terms of the middle. And anyone with a brain in their heads.
Right.
It's just all, you know, it's all a variance, again, of the Southern strategy to kind of fire up the far, far right fringes and get them out to vote. And it's the far right fringes that believe things like Barack Obama was born in Kenya and he's engaged in homosexual acts, right?
Yep.
Well, hey, do me a big favor this week. Subscribe to the After Party if you haven't done so yet. We got that show coming up tomorrow, Friday. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you on the next show.
See ya.